Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
You're listening to Christmas Hamper on FUBAR Radio.
Ian Boltzmann on FUBAR Radio.
Hi, Douglas Booth.
Let's tell him off.
Okay. Yeah, tell
let's tell him off for being late. So what, do you think this is professional, turning up this late?
No, mate, I fucked up.
What possible reason could there be?
I can tell you, but it's the most boring story ever. I just tried to amend a car pickup and they got it wrong and the kid sent the car to the wrong place.
Just leave earlier in the first place. Now, allow for that in your day, in your planning. That's what you should do. I mean, as it turns out, lucky for you, we were running late anyway. So
yeah, we were actually.
It's not actually an issue, but I'm going to pretend it was.
Okay.
So, okay, and who was the car company you were using?
Parker Cars,
okay.
Oh, I've never heard of them, actually.
Should have got an Uber.
Fucking use. I did. That's how I got here.
Did you?
Oh, okay.
Did you use Nat's account?
Christopher Biggins, you know who he is?
I do know who Christopher
Biggins. Used my Uber twice. My points have gone down. Can't get back up. I think when you said earlier, do I think about Biggins? I think about him every time I get an
Biggins
Uber.
Biggins is decimated.
What is your Uber rating?
It's gone down to 4.58. I'm livid.
That's terribly low, isn't it?
Yeah, that's no wonder no one picks me up anymore.
Because of Biggins.
Yeah, because of Christopher Biggins.
I'm desperate to know what he did.
I'm desperate to know why he was in your Uber.
He was on the show.
Oh yeah.
And it was
just
a last-minute thing, and Nat sorted an Uber out for him because he was coming from his
dentist in Camden, so it was around the corner. Yeah, maybe that's it. It was on off his face on Novocaine or something.
This is dentist. He's got a dentist in there. Oh, we're talking about A Guide for the Homesick.
Yes.
Is this correct? Now, I should tell you now, I've not read this press release.
Well, I can tell you. You're in it with lovely Clifford Samuel, who we know really well here. He's so adorable. He's been in before loads of times, as a not on this show, actually, in other shows. But
yes,
Clifford,
when she says we, I don't
Clifford
know.
Clifford is amazing. We love him.
He's a really, really lovely guy.
Yeah.
Who's Clifford? Say hello, actually.
That was very professional, because I don't think Clifford did say any such
thing.
No,
actually, he did, because he did. He said, we were going through the different press that we're doing, and he said, you can go on that radio station and swear as much you want. I was like, sounds great. Yeah. And he says, and they're really lovely guys.
Oh, so
that's actually a true thing.
Clifford said you were a bloke.
He's got a lovely guy. Yeah, I've got a slight issue with Clifford. Not so lovely Clifford.
The lovely guys, there's a little hairy one. There's like a big, tall, hulking guy as well in the corner. That's you, Nat.
5'11". How tall are you, Douglas?
6'1".
Perfect. Excellent height.
Yeah, no, that's right. He's a man.
Yeah. I'm just saying
you're really tall for a lady.
I'm 5'11". It's not that tall.
That's perfect height.
Perfect height. Thank you. That's from Douglas. Be perfect height.
Didn't you play Boy George?
I did play Boy George.
Did you talk to Boy George when you were playing him?
I did.
Is he a bell end or not?
No, he's lovely.
What was that really? We should say. What was?
Is it like Something About the Boy or something? Was it called? What was it called? That show?
Worried about the Boy.
Okay.
I was 17 years old, and about 10 minutes after I got a call from my agent saying I got the job, he found me on my personal Facebook page. He said, I hear you're going to be playing me. I can't say that I'm complaining, but don't be camp. I'm not camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've ranted about Boy George from time to time.
Why?
Haven't I?
I like him.
I always think he's a bit of a dick, but I suspect I'm wrong. But my natural inclination is to think that he's a bit of a knob. I think about Boy George quite a lot. I honestly do, and I suspect in real life I would like him.
I read his book. He was very funny.
His book's brilliant. Yeah, he's great. I have nothing but love for him. And he was actually always extremely generous to me in that whole process. So I only have good things to say.
Is theatre your first love, would you say? Do you have a preference?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I started working when I was 16, basically. Boy George role was my first sort of big break, as it were. And I love making films and TV, and you get to travel and do amazing things, but there is something about the immediacy of theatre that is... It's just so thrilling to actually be able to take an audience on that journey. You make a film and it comes out a year later and you never really meet any of the people that watch it.
Mm.
So to be in the same room as someone that's going on that journey as you tell it chronologically, which is also another great thing about theatre. You can actually, you know, in film, everything's chopped into pieces and you do it, everything's out of order. It's extremely thrilling and I really enjoy it.
Okay.
But I couldn't say that I love it more. There's advantages to both things. You get paid fuck loads more money
when you do a film. You've done some pretty big films. Like when you, Noah, Russell Crowe, obviously.
Yeah.
Big, huge budget film, that
I know,
right?
Yeah. I've made some big films, made some small films, and
I just watched The Limehouse Golem, which I enjoyed very much. It's on Netflix now,
What was the one that wasn't about the Bullingdon Club?
The Riot Club.
Yeah.
That was really good, but I said when I watched it, I was really angry after I said it, which I think was the
you
point,
hated
right?
everyone.
I hate everyone in that film, and you, sorry.
That was the point. It was really difficult.
I've not even seen it, and I hated you in it.
Yeah.
Because what she told me.
It made me so mad.
It does, it makes you really angry.
Yeah.
I think it's quite clever, because it lulls you, well, maybe not you, but it lulls quite a few people in full sense of security. Everyone was quite lovable and witty and weird at the beginning for the first, quarter of the movie,
right.
all these boys, like halfway through the film, it just starts to turn and you just see like the ugliness of their...
What was the legality on that? Was, 'cause it wasn't... It was clearly thinly veiled in terms of what it was actually about, but sure. was there a legality issue with that?
It was based on a play called Posh, which was very successful okay. at the Royal Court
yep.
and then went to the West End. So all the legality, I guess, had been done before.
Mm. So that also didn't use the Bullingdon and all that sort of thing?
It was exactly the same. We just changed the name because Posh... Well, I was quite sad about it, but Posh doesn't actually mean anything outside of England, really.
Port right. out, starboard home.
Okay, I didn't know that.
That's
right.
where they put the... Posh people on boats back in the day because it was the least bumpy
you're on the
bit.
Port out, you're on starboard home.
But no, but actually, weirdly, the producer, he used to be roommates with David Cameron. I always found that a bit weird.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe he had a grudge to...
Oh, maybe he just observed the behaviours, and I'm sure they were... Oh, well, obviously, they were greatly exaggerated within that film, but... And also, I guess, if you see things and go, imagine how bad that could get. You know, when you see people behaving a certain way. I've got certainly friends who I look at and go... Imagine if you just lost your mind a little bit but carried on in the same sort of vein where you stopped being charming and cheeky and you actually turned into a cunt. Do you know what I mean?
But I think that's the most dangerous people, the people that still keep that charm.
Yeah.
And that's what's actually scary about those group of people, the people that sort of rise to the top and they're all so charming but they can...
It's terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
especially if you meet him in person as well.
I've met David Cameron. He's the most charming, lovely person you could ever meet.
I did a gig that David Cameron was at once and he walked out. I think he walked out because, not because of what I was saying, but because by being there, there was an inference, because I was being sweary, and I think that he did it as a fail-safe, get out of this room just in case. And he was right to, because I would have done something.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
So, I am now absolutely beyond over the moon to be joined by Mr. Kurt Vile. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem.
I feel like you, more than a lot of people, manage to get quite a lot of humour into your music, especially like through like little bits of wordplay and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So is that something that you're secretly quite interested in, comedy?
I like to be funny. Me and my bandmates or whoever I'm with, you know, that's definitely part... I think that's a big part of music, part of being on tour. Even before I was on tour, that was the thing to do is, you know... sort of American stoner type of humor, whether or not you're actually getting stoned. That's kind of the world I'm from.
Uh-huh.
And it's often fruitful. I don't know. But it's just fun to... I mean, if you can't joke around, you know, we're totally
screwed.
But
it's nice to see it in a bit of a record as... I mean, just little tiny... Because it's so hard
things.
To get that line right between being a comedy... musician, which you definitely aren't, and dropping in just every now and again a subtle little line, which is great.
Yeah,
and something that
it's just I'm trying to get my personality in there. Yeah, and make people laugh. Yeah, you know, when you have a sad song, sometimes they just got to be sad. You know, I can't. If I had a song about my for a certain friend passing away or something, I'm not gonna like toss a joke in there. But even songs like Pretty Pimpin' or I don't know, like it kind of has a turnaround. You're like, this person doesn't recognize himself, but and then you're like, but then. Whoever this person is sure looking fly with all his stylish
course.
Threads.
Or like, you know, One Trick Ponies, there's a bit of that in there as well.
Yeah.
And I know that from other things that I've read about you that you just kind of like to sit and let the music come out and you don't really have a set way of writing. But I was just wondering if you could give us insight into, this is purely a selfish question for
okay.
me.
All right.
But I am doing the interview, so you just have to deal with it. Come Again. Can you tell me a bit about that song? Because that's probably my favourite one. That's
well,
the one
thanks. I'm glad.
When I'm listening to it, I'm walking down the road. I'm like a tough guy.
That's an earworm, I've been told, and that almost didn't quite even make the record because I was going into the studio, and it's one of those songs that and just like Pretty Pimpin', I wrote this the same way. I was going into work with a new engineer, and I knew I was going in. It was probably the night before I was going to fly to L.A., and I... just wrote Come Again on my banjo and it came pretty quick. What do you want to know how it came out? You know, it's about the world. It's about the world at a boiling point. My songs are, you know, they're sort of current, you know. They're definitely about how the world is pretty scary. I guess the world's been scary in various ways, but yeah, and I also like the thing about the seasons. There's definitely, like, I'm inspired by Townes Van Zandt. He's got a song where he mentions the seasons, and I definitely... took a little inspiration from that. I'm not going to tell you what the song is, but you could figure it out easy.
Cool.
But yeah, it's a banjo strummer. And the girls, the Lucius girls, sang on that. They sing with Roger Waters, apparently. They back him up. But yeah, I had them sing in it. And I wanted them to do sort of like what Leonard Cohen does with female vocals. Everybody sings in unison, but it's very childlike. But, you know, like somehow skilled, very skilled children.
One other thing I want to touch on quickly is obviously everybody knows that you are friends with Adam, who used to be in the War on Drugs. And obviously they've blown up massive to mm-hmm. sort of like a... That, like they're doing the O2 when they come over to yeah. the UK. When
that's not very big.
Well, this I want to ask you. Is there, even if it's like obviously friendly because you're good mates, but is there a bit of rivalry in terms of you want to progress your career to where they are or past? Or
I mean, first of all, I haven't played in the War on Drugs in 10 years, but Adam's like, we're like best friends in spirit. You know, we're best friends, like you could say in real life, but I don't get to see him as much. You know, he's got a whole nother life now where he's not in Philly the same way. And he's very insular. Maybe I am in my own way, too, but he gets really deep in the record-making process, which is awesome, and it's just a different thing. He's got a big band. He's got, like, an E Street type of band mm-hmm. in that they can play these arenas, and I'll be able to do the same thing.
And you have, because you've done it for Neil, right? But
yeah, but I'll be able to do the same thing in my own way, but my thing is, like, slower steps up. That's not to say that one day I'll have a massive leap, but I'm definitely inspired by people like Nick Cave, who he's always been a legend, and he could be really gritty, he could be all really raw, you know, but then, I don't know when he started playing arenas, but I mean, his shows are like the best shows ever nowadays, in the last few years, they've always been great, but now it's even transcending more, and he's like 60, or I don't know how old he is, but he's playing these, so, you know, I'm 38, so I can definitely catch up to that schedule. I could catch up to that schedule, but yeah. Maybe who knows when I'll play,
but I just
play some arenas.
It's like with like me and my mates in sort of what I do, it's like if they sort of get a step ahead of me, I'm like, it makes me work harder to try and catch up to them. That's kind
of
what
everybody does that with. I have plenty of friends that I admire, but I've always been a competitive person. Some people might be playing to bigger audiences, all kinds of bands. But I know in my own little niche, I'm number one.
Of course.
Of where I'm at. Nobody can, like, if you want to talk about music, I got this one little niche I can't, you know, and then others are, people are above me in other niches, but in whatever my niche is, I'm in first place.
Well, I think you're the only one in it as well, actually.
Well, okay.
I think.
Okay.
Which is obviously brilliant, so.
Sweet. Well, that's no contest.
No contest. Now, also, you are a dad. Mm-hmm. Right. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that aspect. Have you found yourself, especially as your girls are getting a little bit older, doing any sort of really stereotypical dad things? Like, do you have to have a go at them for certain things that you've been like, oh, God, I sound like someone's dad now? Or like,
I love dad jokes. I love corny dad jokes in general.
Do you ever find yourself going like, I'll tidy your room? And then you're like, oh, I'm
no,
exactly
I never,
like a dad.
I never,
is there anything?
I
like
never
really
say
dad-y?
Tidy your room. I never like, say that.
Yeah, yeah, just wondered if you ever become stereotypical.
Yeah, I mean, I just
dad.
Sing goofy songs, or I do dad things, like I swing them around, and you know, I don't really
just
enforce.
A cool dad.
Try not to enforce rules, but once in a while, they have to clean the whole house from top to bottom. But that's it.
Okay, good. Do they get pocket money for that, or what?
No, just kidding. No.
But you could, you know, you do realize that's a thing that used to happen to me.
Well, like,
chores for pocket money.
Yeah, I'm not a strict dad. But I'm inspired by Mrs. Hannigan from Annie.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
Speaking of legends, might I add, if you forgive my language, fucking legends.
Fucking legends.
Yeah. No, you can say something else if you like. Say,
yes, sir.
Motherfucking legends.
There you go.
I knew that's what you're looking for. I love that. Motherfucking legends.
Thank you.
We do, of course, have Blackstreet in the house.
I can't believe I'm actually.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I can't believe I'm actually saying that with my own mouth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying.
That is just the weirdest thing I've said probably since I was born. Because,
wow.
Do you know what I mean? I think all I need now is to interview Jodeci. And I've just, like, interviewed all of my flipping, like, R&B,
really dope,
like,
man.
The people that I literally grew up listening to.
Straight hey, well, listen, it's a pleasure of y'all just having us here, you know what I mean? We, this country has just always blessed us and
absolutely.
Kept us kept us the legends that we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, no, yes, it's true. Yes. Do not shy away from that word, Henri. You don't need to. Legends.
Don't shy away from it at all.
Yeah.
Capital letters. But even seeing your faces, it's like you look exactly the same. Nothing's changed.
Well, you know, black don't crack.
That's true. That's true.
First of all, were you pissed off when Backstreet Boys dropped?
That's an important question for me.
Absolutely. I told Teddy to we should sue these guys.
Really?
Because it's too close to our name. Because you know what?
That's what I thought.
Yes,
Look, they came out overseas. We came out first. You know what I mean? In Germany, like when we first started touring, you used to see signs with Backstreet Boys.
No way.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Backstreet Boys or Blackstreet Boys?
Backstreet Boys. And see, that was the thing.
It was too close.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do it. But you know,
I was young at the time. I must have been around 10 or 11 when I first heard of Backstreet Boys, and like, I even at that young age already knew that that sounded a lot like Blackstreet.
Right. Absolutely. Do you know what I mean?
And to be honest, you could look at it as paying homage, or you could look at it as just downright like that's kind of taking the piss. Because now there is a
kind of jumping on your wave in a way because they know it's going to work, and it's like that's kind of exactly.
You know,
they had an inside guy.
But you know, we still get along with those guys. You know what I mean?
I suppose it's not their fault. They probably didn't even name themselves.
They probably looked at you and were like, "Oh my God, this is." You know what I mean? They probably thought they were paying homage. You know, this is what usually.
It worked out for them, and we're definitely friends with them. We'd love to do a tour with them.
That's what I was going to say. Imagine.
You know what I mean? That'd be incredible.
Yes. It writes itself as well.
Yeah.
The name of the tour is would you just call it Blackstreet Boys?
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Pick one. Oh, shit.
Blackstreet Boys.
Blackstreet Boys.
Blackstreet Boys.
That'd be incredible.
Listen, but can you imagine the songs? Can you just imagine back-to-back songs?
I would write the set list right now, just off the top of my head. I'd be able to write my dream set list. Both bands. I won't for now. I'm gonna wait for the tour to happen and I'm gonna write it privately and then reveal it with a timestamp.
I knew.
He has all that concocted in his mind.
I think about weird things. So what was it like working with Foxy Brown?
Foxy was a wild one.
It
was great.
That song is still today.
My God! Yeah. Listen, you can't go to especially a black UK wedding or like a proper people's dance without hearing that song.
It was an anthem
in New York.
Massive tune.
Wow!
But obviously, the original was huge. And that was symptomatic of that era, wasn't it? Like a lot of people were looking back on the kind of old records and loving to like recognize the samples and stuff. But you guys,
and she was the first female hip hop to really come out like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely,
it was amazing.
And how different was that to working with like say Pac? I'm assuming that you were all in the studio together.
No, absolutely not. Let me tell you how that happened.
Yes,
you're talking about what's the song?
No, you're
talking
about Tupac. The song I did. With Tupac.
I think they're talking about the sample.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Which one are you talking about?
The sample, like Don't Leave, exactly. Being the changes.
So we were all label mates. Mm. You know what I mean? So
these are the important questions. That's what I mean. Exactly. I'm trying to find out.
They tried to jack us, you know what I mean? They even tried to jack us with No Diggity. Mm-hmm. If you go back to... Yeah, what's the song?
Did they have a similar song?
How Do You Want It?
How Do You Want It?
No. How Do You Want It?
No. It was called...
They were
dissing Dr. Dre in it because Dre wasn't part of Def Jam.
Death Row anymore. Right.
So they had Aaron Hall in there. They had
Jodeci. Yeah, yeah. That was How Do You Want It, wasn't it?
No, not How Do You Want It. It was Tupac. He released it.
Right.
It was called...
Because he dissed Dre quite a bit, didn't he?
Yeah. He dissed Dre in there. No Diggity was definitely,
That is a classic. Still slaps.
And especially when we got Dre on it, it was kind of like...
It was over.
Do you know what I just clocked as well? I can't remember which one of you pointed it out. I think it was you, sir. That it has no baseline.
Yeah, no, that was Mark.
No Diggity. It has no baseline.
No, it doesn't at all.
How mad is that?
That is
and it still slaps so hard.
Move, yeah.
Thank you so much for passing through.
We appreciate you.
Not as much as we appreciate you, family, in here.
We appreciate it.
Yes, come on.
Y'all have fun on this show.
Are you guys coming to the show?
Yes, we are now.
Now we're back because we want
you guys come and introduce us.
That would be great.
Are you serious?
Yes.
So I want you guys to hype the crowd up.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, fuck it.
Come on, man. This is happening.
Fuck it. Yes.
Okay, now look. I don't need you acting like that on the stage.
Tuesday Takeover with Giovanni Letford on FUBAR Radio.
Lovely listeners, you're in for a treat today. I'm Giovanni Letford. I'm a DJ, presenter, and I'm joined by Jill Marie Cooper.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I've got my cup of tea next to me. I'm ready to chat, so...
That's good. Well, why don't everyone in the studio give a round of applause for the one and only Tim... Professor Tim, actually. I should say Professor Tim, shouldn't I?
Yes, please.
If you want
Professor
to.
Professor Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tim, tell us about... You were a monk, right?
I was. I wasn't a very good monk. I got thrown... No. I got thrown out for rank disobedience. I have to say that word very carefully. Rank. It was all about the rhubarb patch.
I'm totally confused now.
No. Every day they said to me, what do you think you should do this afternoon? And I'd say, I think I should be doing something in the library. And they said... Garden, rhubarb patch. One day I thought, I'm going to be 10 steps ahead of them. I'm going to take a leaf out of Giovanni's book. And they said to me, what do you think you're going to do this afternoon? I said, I'm going to go to the rhubarb patch. And they said, you're absolutely right. That was it. I spent my entire life in the rhubarb patch, and I rebelled. I applied to Oxford without permission.
Is that what you did?
And I didn't tell anybody. Mm. And then the months sort of wore on, and I got to September or something. I said, you do know I'm going to Oxford next month. And they said, pack your bags. That was it.
But it sounds like if you'd already planned that you were ready to pack your bags anyway.
I thought it'd be very jolly to go up to Oxford as a monk, you know.
Was it jolly?
Did you? It was wonderful.
I was in Oxford during the Brideshead time. So Brideshead was being screened on the television, and we were all walking around the place in white trousers and wonderful cardigans and jumpers hanging over our shoulders and carrying teddy bears. It was tremendous.
I love it.
Yeah. And then, was that the beginning of your academic journey, as it were?
Probably. It was also the beginning of my sort of a certain amount of chaos because I think in my second year I was given a white rabbit. Mm. And I kept this rabbit in the front of my... Well, I kept it in a fireplace and I took the rabbit on walks... Or I put it in my bicycle basket. And on one dreadful occasion, the rabbit had a yellow lead, and it matched my bow tie. And on one dreadful occasion, the rabbit got away.
Like it does.
And I was crawling for about 2 hours through Christchurch Meadows, and I found the rabbit, took the rabbit home. And a month later, the rabbit, who was a boy, gave birth.
My goodness. You have had a life, haven't you?
So you found a different rabbit.
I think it was the same rabbit. Yeah. I think I just wasn't very good at identifying
the gender.
Right,
fair
okay.
Enough.
Yeah.
And did you decide to just go from one day from rabbits to goats? Or like how did the goat herding in Greece?
The goat herding was again completely accidental. I got stranded in Greece, in the Peloponnese, in the southern bit of Greece, near Sparta.
I love how you just say this, like, really casual. I just got stranded in Greece, like, just like a normal day.
It was a normal day. I remember, you know, Sparta... Have you been to Sparta?
I don't think I have.
You see, there's nothing there. The Spartans didn't build anything except for their bodies. That was it.
Right.
But just down the road from Sparta, there's a wonderful little town, the last stronghold of the Byzantine Empire. And I was there for a while, and then I went up into the Taygetos Mountains, and an old man said to me, "Sonny, would you like to look after my goats?" And I thought, two or three goats, what's the problem there? And he presented me this tribe, a tribe of 100 black goats with horns out here like handlebars.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh, I'd be terrified.
Yeah, that's a bit mad.
They were lovely. They climbed trees. Have you ever milked a goat?
No, I'm kind of all right for that, really.
Milking goats is extraordinary because when you milk a cow, the cow leans on you, you lean on the cow, certain things come out the backside, and everything is fine because the pail of milk is in the right place. But when you're trying to milk a goat, you have to sort of pull the udder through the back legs. You milk the goat relaxes and rather more falls into the pail of milk than you expect.
You've done it all, haven't you?
Actually, on that, you know, you mentioned about goats. I was meant to ask you a minute ago. You said about they climb trees. I was in Greece last year for a wedding, and we went to, is it Tanya? and one of those Greek islands.
Chania.
Chania.
So you went down to Crete.
Yes,
to Crete. The north side of Crete. Yeah. I know it very well.
Yeah, it's because it's like a, it's a walking island as well. People tend to.
Is that?
I think you get a ferry from Chania to somewhere else. The names escaped me, but Chania's really nice. But yeah. One thing I noticed was that with the goats, there were loads of goats, and they were like literally stood on the most, you know, like imagine like a cliff edge, and you know, like at the very edge there's like a rock. Yeah. And there's a goat just standing on the rock on the cliff edge, and you're like, how did the goat get there, and how is it going to get down?
They can go up vertically. They're quite extraordinary.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah. I never knew all of this. I just eat curried goat.
But
it's like, sorry, goats.
But they've also got
were...
the most lovely personality.
Oh, don't. That's terrible.
No, really, they have. Every goat I had, I gave it a name of someone I knew in the village. And occasionally
we're just like tracing the goat.
I've got to tell you, Cy from the circle.
Oh yeah.
Yesterday he got a new calf.
Oh.
And he's called it Professor Tim.
Professor Tim.
Oh.
Isn't that lovely?
Is that off the back of you telling him that you named goats after people, or was that just a?
I don't know. I'm incredibly touched.
Mm. Oh, I'm glad.
Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio.
Today in the studio, I've got with me Rose and Rosie.
Yay! Yay! Rosie's pouring herself a drink.
That's just a massive glass of wine. And Rose, your drink is throffing over there. You might want to put your mouth on it.
Look, it's as excited as I am.
Hey! Welcome, everyone, to Drunk Advice Live.
Yeah! There should be a jingle. Shall I make one
right now? We used to have our own jingle. It wasn't drunk advice, but it was advice.
Okay.
Drunk advice of the week. Sometimes it's... What was it?
Advice of the week is shit. Sometimes it's not shit.
There you are, Hannah.
Oh, I loved
Thanks,
it.
Hannah.
That was great. Here's some questions. Can you see any that you...
My girlfriend wants to try having rougher sex.
Ooh.
I'm not scared. Just very apprehensive. God. Sounds like you're scared. have you got any advice on how I should feel confident enough to go ahead and try something new?
Okay, how rough are we talking? Are we talking chains?
Listen,
are we talking nipple
cracks?
Are we talking
scratches?
Yeah. Ooh,
you need a safe word. You need a safe word. And if you have a safe word, then you can do whatever.
We had a safe word once. What was it? Was it strawberry cheesecake?
Strawberry cheesecake.
That's a bit too long.
It's really long, which was the problem.
The best or like most simple system that I've heard people use is red, yellow, green.
Okay.
So green is like, I'm into this, keep going. Yes. Yellow is like, slow down a bit.
We'll cool off.
Red is like, stop.
No.
Absolutely not.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Like
that's a good way.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Universal.
That's a great way.
Get a safe word, because seriously, you never know. You might be apprehensive, right? But if you were calm enough to be able to chill, you may enjoy things, but if you're feeling anxious, you may not enjoy it. You know, you may dry up and be like, oh.
Dry up. That's horrendous.
Yeah, but it's just, let's be honest,
I love it.
That's a technical term.
That is,
I love it.
Yeah.
You can dry up.
So
I would say have a safe word.
I would also say that I find it easier with a lack of inhibitions to have, like, rougher sex when drunk.
Yeah,
but,
same.
But you don't... Ideally, if this is with your girlfriend and it's something that you're discussing and you want to, like, actually, like, explore together, then I would recommend not doing it drunk.
I'm terrible at drunken sex. I don't understand anything.
Oh, I love drunken sex.
Yeah,
just
like, fumble.
I'm such a fumbler. Do you remember that one time we were watching Bridesmaids? And I was like,
basically,
am I doing it right?
Basically.
Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne on FUBAR Radio.
We have a very special guest on the line right now. Good mate of mine. And if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be as known as I am and even have this radio show, I dare say. Mm. People, we have the illustrious, the massively successful Ed Sheeran on the line. Yo, brother.
You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. You sound in very high spirits.
No, I literally just woke up on my sofa. I had a driving lesson this morning. I fell asleep as soon as I got in.
Fair play.
I hate driving lessons, man.
Yeah, we were talking about driving lessons earlier. Do you enjoy it, mate?
I really do, yeah. I really, really like it.
Yeah?
I like the freedom.
Yeah, I like freedom.
But I haven't, you know, I kind of missed out on the driving when I was younger and everyone else was doing it, so I'm kind
of
trying to catch up.
You were making your own path. You were busy carving your own path musically. Driving could wait, right?
I guess so. I'm having to catch up now. A bit odd when you're in a town centre and suddenly, like, a group of kids start following you in a car
trying to do three-point turns.
Yeah.
Shit, I just remembered that. So what, are you doing the lessons in London?
Yeah. I was doing them around where I live.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I won't disclose that. Have you got your sights on the first car? Is it going to be like a nice, neat little P-Reg Fiesta?
I bought a Mini. It arrived this evening, actually.
Oh, wow. Nice.
What kind of Mini is it? Is it a new Mini or an old Mini?
Please say it's an old one.
I got it as an automatic, so it's a new one. It's nice. People keep telling me that I'm a hairdresser and or an estate agent.
Is it orange?
No, it's black.
Tints?
No tints, no.
No! 20-inch grills? Twinkies?
No grills, no.
No,
just
Ed,
straight
mate.
On black.
I know, I'm letting the team down.
You're going to put some Twinkies on that, I know you.
Yeah, I'll get some dives or something.
Go down to, like, South End and do, like, wheel spins and get, like, a little the speakers in the back and all that. Make sure you get them blue lights that you put on the bottom as well.
Yeah. I'm in, and a bottle of white stuff.
Aside from that huge thing that's happening in your life, learning to drive, you just played 3 sellout shows at Wembley Stadium. Have you come down yet, mate? From that feeling, because I haven't, bro. I was lucky enough to see you on the Saturday and have a little catch up and a drink and that. And like I said, I still haven't come down from it. Do you know what I mean?
I just got really ill afterwards. I kind of like body just kind of shut down. So I've got the flu pretty much the day after. But that usually happens after like a long tour.
You pretty much haven't stopped. I'd say your career's been a long tour.
Yeah, well, I get ill twice a year. I get ill in the summer and at Christmas. It's always when I get, like, a week off.
What's next? This a rest for the rest of the year?
No, I got the equivalent of Wembley in Ireland next weekend.
Yeah, of course. And then
back to America, like a month, and then I go to Australia for a month, and then I'm done.
Then I'm done. But you're not really, though, are you? You're never done, mate.
I'll have to make the third album. But yeah, in terms of like touring, I'll be done.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Have you got ideas for the third album?
Yeah, my main idea for any album that I do is just good songs. If you have good songs, the rest will kind of follow.
And there's no one at the moment who's probably got a better judgment of a good song than yourself, mate. I reckon you're going to be quite big one day, mate. If you carry on the way you're going, mate.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
What are your plans for the rest of the week?
I've got to go up to Manchester at some point to see a mate, and I haven't really got any plans. I'm just here driving every day and then collapsing on my sofa. That's kind of it.
Are you still very surprised at the sort of monumental success of the second album? Have you come to terms with that yet?
Well, you know, I expected to get to a certain point with this album, you know, and it's taken me way, way, way beyond anything I expected or anyone else expected. You know, I'd finished up the last album with, like, 5 Hammersmith Apollo, so I just assumed with this album I'd end up doing, like, 102 Arena. Be able to do 3 Wembley Stadiums is pretty
yeah, didn't you insane. Did 502 Arenas, didn't you?
We did 4.
4.
In the end.
Only four, mate. Jesus, mate. You're slacking. We were going to do
5, but by the time we booked them, we were already starting to think about doing Wembley. So I was like, we shouldn't like over-egg it if we're going to try and do that.
Yeah. You know for a fact you could have definitely done like 10 or some shit.
Yeah, I think it's good to leave people wanting more. Like, we could have done 5 Wembleys, but the fact that we did 3 and sold them out quickly means the next time we come, we can do more.
Absolutely. You've probably noticed the sort of massive rise since your rise to superstardom in sort of guitar-wielding troubadours. Do you have any advice for them, apart from stop copying you so fucking much?
No, do you know what? I think it always comes along in waves. When I first started trying to get into the industry, like, James Blunt was having massive success, and there was another wave of people, and that was 10 years ago now. So, like, I reckon in the next 10 years, someone else will pop off as well. But I'd say the advice is, like, just enjoy it. Don't do anything if you don't enjoy it. When I first started trying to be a singer-songwriter, everyone was telling me the songs I should sing and the way I should perform, and I wasn't really enjoying it. And the moment I stopped that and started doing what I wanted to do, I enjoyed it.
Be a bit selfish.
Yeah, I'd say... Yeah, don't try and fit a mould. Like, just create your own mould.
Yeah, be yourself, right? Don't try and be someone else.
Totally sensible.
Tuesday Takeover with Jamal 15 on FUBAR Radio.
What's up, people? It's your boy Jamal 15, and you are locked in to the Jamal 15 Takeover on FUBAR Radio. Everything you can find us on is FUBAR Radio. I'm here with my co-host Maya, the man laugh.
Oh, Savannah. We're not going to go into that.
Well, yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do that right now. She has a very manly laugh.
I'm Maya Savannah, and I will try and get through this show without doing my man laugh.
It will happen.
With a little sprinkling of snorting.
So, we've got Liam Charles from the 2017 Great British Bake Off. Mm-hmm. Week 8, he was wrongly eliminated. Controversy online. He's doing better than the winners of the shows. Yeah, he's top boy. That's no summer house down here, fam. Liam.
What are you saying?
Wagwan G, what's going on?
I'm alright, you know. Yeah, I've had like a chill day today.
Is it? Yeah. You're Mr. Worldwide and that, innit?
No, I'm still national.
No, you're not!
I'm still national.
No, you're not.
I am still national, no. I promise you.
Let's be honest now, yeah. We'll get into that. And actually, no, let's get into it now. Like, I swear you're in a relationship, innit?
Yeah,
you're in a relationship.
Why did you hesitate? Why did you pause?
Because obviously,
you
like,
paused, looked left and right, and then said,
"Trust
yeah.
me."
And you puffed.
Wagwan.
So obviously, like recently, you know, you have like your ups and downs in it. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm still currently in one. So I don't know.
Are you in an up or a down?
A middle.
Oh God, I hate those.
Why are you in the...
Wait. Can we just break down first? His girlfriend does not live in the UK. She doesn't even live in Europe.
Yeah.
She's not even a part of Brexit.
I have to get Esther visa, bro.
Jeez, where does your girlfriend live?
She's from the States.
The States. He's got money long.
His money's long.
Imagine having a girlfriend, overseas. He's like, babes, what are you doing tonight? Oh, nothing. The girls are going out. I don't want to go out. Oh, let me just fly and come see you.
Oh, right.
His money long. He got a long money.
We were FaceTiming for, like, quite a while. And then we clocked that we liked each other when she came in January.
Mm-hmm.
And then since then, we've been, you know, trying to work out and that. And then, like, we made it, like, official in April. And then, yeah. Okay. But currently, it's a bit of a, like...
It's not easy,
it's
is it,
techie,
overseas?
Bro. It's so techie, because obviously there's the distance, there's the time difference, and then the cultural difference as well. You know, British sarcasm is completely to American sarcasm. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they have sarcasm.
They don't have it. No, we're more intelligent than they are on the right. Yeah,
and I feel like, no offence, I think some of them are taps.
Serious?
You're whispering on radio.
Like, no, they are 100%.
Just low key, like
super tapped. Oh, yeah.
You want to elaborate on that?
Well, I just feel like maybe not my girlfriend, but like.
Oh, of course.
Nah, you can say she's tapped. She
like
loves you.
Some, yeah. Actually, majority. They feel like their lives is a reality TV show.
Oh my god!
So if I'm being super chill that day, I have to like conjure some sort of drama out of thin air, and it's just like.
Real
why
talk.
Are you doing
that's
that?
That's exhausting.
Swear.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I feel like my trims are lasting longer because my hair's falling out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Come on.
I love the science behind that.
Love that. Yeah. Love that. Okay. Now, listen, I know Liam's got a game for me and Maya.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, we know nothing about this game.
Yeah.
Liam has spoke to the producers.
Basically, it's just like a set of questions, right?
Yeah.
And I will judge you depending on how you answer these questions, Jamal.
Well, go on, do it. Do it then. Do it.
All right, so first one. Okay, you're going out for dinner on the first date, yeah?
Oh, I love a bit. Yeah, I love a bit of food.
Where,
and that.
Where are you taking the date and why?
Okay, where am I taking her? Yeah. Okay, so like, I don't want to sweet her too much, yeah, because it's a first date and I'm trying to figure her out. So I'm gonna keep it simple but effective. So
don't say, okay, go on.
You know what I'm gonna say? Man's gonna take Hernando's. It's simple, yeah. Because listen, you can judge a lot when you take a girl to Nando's. Because
like what?
Okay, think about it. Like she's obviously more than likely going to be eating chicken, yeah. So if she's having lemon and herb, medium, I can see what kind of level she is as a person.
And
how spicy is she?
What's the turn off for you in terms of chicken flavor?
If she's on the garlic and herb thing and goes, oh, that's kind of hot, y'all. You got brethren.
Oh,
get to the door now.
Oh.
Curtains, fam.
Okay.
What, lemon and herbs hot? Listen, if my mum cooked for you, then you're done out here. You're done out here.
You ain't seeing tomorrow.
Yeah, trust. My mum's oxtail's hot. Lord oh, God. Yeah. So I'll take Nando's thing.
Okay, I read that. All right, so now it's gone well. Now you're four dates deep, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You offer to cook for her.
Yeah.
Now, she's going to the gaff.
She's
going to
want to be wifey after I cook for
right,
her.
Right, so
what
are you cooking for her?
What am I cooking for her? Ah, yeah. Oh, boy.
No Guantanamo bay meals, you know.
Listen, you know what? What am I going to cook for? After I find out what her food preference is, and I'll probably just cook up a... I have to be like a traditional thing, innit? So some fried dumpling, look a bit of mac and cheese and that, you know... I might look a bit of, I might do some southern fried chicken actually. Some southern fried chicken and waffles.
Mm.
Chicken and waffles, yeah. I'm gonna have a tap after
so
this.
So chicken, waffles, macaroni cheese.
Yeah, I'm a feeder though. So I'm a feeder. So I love to, like, you know, I'll plump you up. So I'm gonna make. I want her slouch on the sofa like.
She might not be able to do anything else.
No, exactly. No, I want to go on the sofa. Yeah, I want to go on the sofa. Like, I want to have sex with you, but after that, I might want to just go to bed. I'm like, you know what? That's fine. That's fine.
Oh my God.
You're satisfied.
side now.
So is that your winning meal?
Yeah, that's that, like...
Chicken and waffles.
So, like,
chicken
and waffles. Food,
that's comfy. Yeah, comfy. Like, you're comfy now, aren't you? Like, that's relax. Relax. I'm going to go play computer. Relax. Like, lay on the sofa and sleep.
Mm-hmm. You like chicken,
I don't even eat it. I'm pescatarian
He's
now,
pescatarian,
but...
You're pesco.
Yeah, I'm pesco, but listen, I know everyone else isn't, so I would just... Everyone else...
I've got a question.
Go on.
So, if you're pesco, yeah. Why are you taking your date to Nando's?
Because I'm looking after her, not me. Come on, G.
So you're not going to eat anything?
I'll just have avocado and chips.
That is dead.
What do you mean?
As a pescatarian, there's a lot more options for you.
I know, but not at Nando's, let's be honest.
Yeah, but
you don't
have
peri-peri fish now?
Peri-peri fish. That sounds ridiculous.
That sounds ridiculous. Good, though.
Hey, welcome to Nando's. Can I get your order? Yeah, can I please get a peri-peri fish? Excuse me.
Okay, so I've got some quick questions. So it's just either or. So I'm going to say them and you need to think quickly.
Yeah, sure.
No bugging.
Yeah, cool. They're called Who Are You Quick Fire Questions. So there's only 10. All right, so here we go. 1, 2, 3. Nights in or nights out?
That was way too long.
Nights out.
Oh, God. Number 2, sing or dance?
Dance.
Big spoon or little spoon?
Big spoon.
Burger or pizza?
Burger.
Good hair or good eyebrows?
Good hair.
Morning sex or morning conversations?
Morning sex.
Trust me, he's trying to talk
Why
in the morning, man.
Why did you need to whisper that? That was quite creepy.
Yeah, but who's trying to talk in the morning? Your breath stinks. Come on, G. Okay, but Liam, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, bro.
No,
absolute bro. Legend.
Well, hopefully next time you come on the show, you do bring us some cake.
Yeah, trust. He's selfish, isn't he?
Do you know what I mean?
Man's a baker. Man even come on here with no food.
International.
I am not international. I am national. Ian Bolton.
I've got to interview Bob Sucker.
Hello.
How big are your testicles?
Oh, I'm going to send you photos. I have a joke, so this is a joke, so I have to say that, so okay. It doesn't sound like I'm planned. The joke was that people do send me dick pics, and I'm sure they do to you as well. Is that correct?
Do you know what? Actually, we have on this show, we've had dick pics.
We have had a dick pic.
No, not this show. It was a different show I did here. I did a show about sex, and this guy kept sending a picture of his penis. It was enormous.
He can be arrested, correct?
Yeah. I would have thought so, yes.
I thought so.
But then you saw his penis, and you felt bad, so you figured no charges. People that send me dick pics, I block them, so the joke is I'm a cock blocker.
Nice, okay.
And it doesn't require a laugh, because when you tell someone you're telling a joke, you've ruined it.
Well, they're waiting to analyze, aren't they then, Bob?
Yeah, it's over now. I'll never tell it again.
I'm not one really for sending dick pics, really, Bob. But
no, I'm not into pornography. I'd rather talk about it, but not at length.
Yeah. Well, the length was the issue.
I might lay on my back and take a picture of mine next to Big Ben, just for the heck of it. Just to maybe get a level, see if it's straight.
When was the last time you came to London?
Oh, I was there last time with my daughters. I have three daughters that are now 31, 28, and 25. Sounds like I'm a pimp. pick your favorite of my daughters. Anyone
Which one's got the best personality?
They put millions of dollars into their education.
Yeah.
That's how you get your money back. You sell them. But my fiance, who's older than my daughters, which is a miracle, is coming with me, and she's never been to London. She's been all over the world. And I've been there a few times. I was there once with an ex-girlfriend, may she rest in peace, but she's alive. But
I've got a friend of them.
Oh, my. Life is not easy for any of us, I'll tell you.
No,
and I think it's harder for us here in America at the moment, I think, for some of us.
I could believe that. Could you make it to your fiancé for fun that there is actually a place on London Bridge? It won't be London Bridge. What is it? What's the Parliament Bridge? What's that one?
Westminster.
Westminster Bridge. Maintain on Westminster Bridge, there is a little tent where you can go in there and you can take a dick pic next to Big Ben. It does work.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, the end of the tent is open, and you can lay down. You have a bit of privacy from the other sides, but you can actually take right down your body. You can lay yourself down, get yourself in a proud state, and you can actually take a picture of your penis next to Big Ben.
Is that like a private little thing? Are you allowed to even do that, or can could you do one in a bent over position? Because then you could be big bent over.
It could be. Oh, that is excellent, Bob. That is why you're.
See that? That goes like with my other dick pic humor, but that one wasn't planned, which makes it more painful.
Yeah, no, it was excellent. But I'll tell you what the other issue is as well is Big Ben at the moment is barely visible. You can't really see it because it's surrounded by scaffold at the moment. Mm.
Oh, that's upsetting. Yeah. But you can get in. Do you have to crawl under the scaffold? Because that's really all I want to show my fiance when we get there.
I think it's all closed.
Well, you know what I'm going to do in any case? I'll bring my selfie stick just in case I need it.
Right.
Because I got to get a good shot. I mean, I mean that in every sense of the word.
No, you're exactly right. And I think I want in on this idea with you, Bob. Can I tell you what I've been given in terms of information about you? I know who you are. I recently saw you on the Gary Shandling documentary. Was that right? You were on there, weren't you?
Yes. Yes, Gary was an old friend, and it was a complicated relationship, and Judd Apatow did a great job on that thing.
Do you know what? It was, I don't know how widely seen that's been in the UK. I know it was on Sky Atlantic over here, because it was on HBO in the States.
Yes, it was.
And Gary in the UK would be like mainly known for Larry Sanders, I would imagine. You know, that would be
right.
Certainly what he'd be known for the most. Certainly not known as a stand-up comedian in the UK. And It's Gary Shandling's show would have had a cult appeal in the UK, certainly.
My show, Full House, which is a family show, was like Sky One for 4 years.
Yeah,
that's right.
Said, we've had enough of that.
Yeah. But that's right. But it was, I was a huge fan of Gary Shandling. Like, I really was. And I am currently revisiting It's Gary Shandling's show. Watching the whole thing again, and it's a stunning piece. But I did find how you spoke. Well, you said then about your relationship being complicated. Could we talk about that a little bit? Do you mind?
Yeah, I mean, I had the person that started out my career, Brad Gray, was a dear friend, and I introduced Gary to him, and he was his manager, and they had a very difficult business dealing, and they went through kind of a divorce, and it was incredibly painful. I'm very close with his family. We were on. He went through my when I got divorced. He was like my best friend throughout it. But it was at the same time that I was getting divorced that Brad was sued by Gary, and it was just really uncomfortable. And all those years, those 15, 18 years, I kept trying to still be close with Gary because I still loved him, and I still do.
Yeah.
And Brad passed away 2 years ago, so these are two friends, one estranged and one to stay close with, but we lose people, and it's severely painful. And if you're caught in the middle, which I know some people would come up to me after they saw it and say, I've been in that situation. It's a terrible, terrible place to be because I still have love for them. But Gary was one of the first comedians I ever knew, and all we did was write dick jokes together. That's all we ever did.
Yeah.
So I'm 22, he's 26, and he would say jokes like, I think my dog is sick because his penis tastes bitter. And I would say that's a very good joke. And you can't really, I mean, that's not politically incorrect to say that right now. You're
that's
basically
fine.
Saying that you enjoy your dog. You know, it's not like you're not dehumanizing women or men, or it's not a racial slur. It's just saying that you blow dogs is
what
I'm saying.
Yeah, simple as that.
Just to break, I knew I needed to break that down.
It's good that you did it. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to you deconstruct that, Jack.
Yeah, you have to deconstruct something that needs absolutely none.
It was great how you told us what we were meant to think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what comedians do. And
I know,
to
right?
me,
I know.
A lot of my humor, a lot of what I do is very British. My influences were Monty Python.
Yeah.
My influences were, I mean, I met Benny Hill when I was on a morning show on CBS in the United States. But he was very funny and very kind, and he made me laugh a lot when I was young. But it was interesting that Peter Sellers is the golden goose of all of it. And I'm friends with a bunch of British comedians, like Jimmy Carr says, you're just like me. You look like you're a family guy on TV, and then you go out on stage and you say horrific things.
Yeah.
That's what you should be doing. Let them know that you think pedophile thoughts. And I said, I don't. Stop it. And then he would keep saying, come on, admit it, you do. And this is a Just for Laughs in Montreal, this is on stage, and this is not good.
It does sound like Jimmy, though.
It's a free associative, very comfortable talking to anybody. I've been doing it for 43 years, so you could put me in front of a million people, 40 people. It doesn't really matter.
You
could put me alone with someone in a hospital. You know, and I would do puppetry of the penis for them, which is...
That would be lovely, Bob.
It's magical.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
This is the busiest little studio in the land today.
We've got the absolutely gorgeous love artist, Jordan Rianne.
Hi. Jordan Rianne. She's in the house.
Thanks so much for coming in.
You're looking stunning.
Absolutely stunning.
Oh my God, I don't feel it. I've had like no hours sleep.
Why?
I've just been running around like a headless chicken.
Has it been non-stop since you got out of that villa?
Stop, honestly. I'm like waiting for a day where I literally have nothing to do and I can sit on my sofa and catch up on all my films.
But today is not that day.
It's not that day today. No,
we're not going there because you've got to talk to us. Now, firstly, we've got to say... Curtis.
He's lovely. Do you know what?
Caused a bit of drama, didn't it?
It did. I think I underestimated like how big it would actually be, but he really meant it. Like everything he said to me, he genuinely meant. I'm actually still quite surprised. Like even when I talk about it, I'm actually quite shocked as to how it even happened in the first place. But.
Wow. How did you feel about Curtis? I mean, what was your kind of reaction?
I was speechless. I think everyone's seen the moment when my jaw just kind of dropped. But I respected it. But for me, it's like I love him to death as a person. I really do think, you know, regardless of how he handled the situation, he is a genuinely nice person. Romantically, it just wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like it didn't really matter what was going to be said. It was all the answer was always going to be the same. And genuinely, all I cared about was him and Amy, even over what me and Danny had.
Right,
it's not about you two. Forget me. It's about you two. So, yeah.
I thought initially that they were probably a potential winning couple.
Yeah, so did I.
So he really messed up.
He did. He risked everything.
I mean, did you feel for Amy? I mean, did your heart just go out to her?
Oh, yeah. And all I cared about was how she felt. As much as I had respect for Curtis, for being honest, I just couldn't imagine Amy walking in and me stood next to him at the fire pit. Can you just imagine that?
No.
Amy walks in and I'm there holding his hand at the fire pit. Like, it just wasn't, it just could never have been
You're
that.
Girl's girl, aren't you?
I really am. Like, and for me, I just felt like this is not the right way to do it. At least have the respect to tell her first. Mm-hmm. We're both going to be in the villa and then see. But then I feel like the moment he told her, he kind of realized with me it was a no-go anyway. So
I mean,
do you think Curtis ballsed it up, basically? I mean, do you think he really kind of didn't think properly?
No, actually, do you know what? From being in there, I actually thought he thought it through really well, and that's what scared me even more.
Wow.
He really meant it. He really thought about it. And when he said, you know, if recoupling was in half an hour, I'd pick you, he meant it. And that was like days worth of him thinking about it, because obviously for you guys it's like a day or two later, but he'd been thinking about that for days. We were in Castromore for 5.5 days. Okay. So typically Castromore's only 2.
Yeah.
And we had 5.5. So he had a lot of time to think about it and he meant it. It stressed me out even more that he was that serious.
He's getting himself into a little bit of
I think since it's actually not been very good for him. He's kind of tumbled down a bit in people's estimations.
Yeah.
What do you feel about him and Maura? Because it's, well, I mean, there was quite some action.
There was. I'm very intrigued for them to all come out and tell us the real
what's actually
honestly,
gonna...
what's really going
what went on under those covers.
Honestly,
I mean, what do you think about that situation?
I actually think whether or not it will last long, long, long term, I don't know. But I actually think it could be something. Curtis has this like really fiery, cheeky side that we've never seen as a public. Like, you just do not see it. And it's almost as equal or on par with how Maura is. And it's just a side you don't see of him. And I feel like Maura brings it out of him, but he knows how to silence her at the same time. It's like he kind of makes her a little bit more...
But why didn't they work this out earlier?
Oh, he had Amy.
I don't understand. She's always liked him. Really?
She's always liked him. From day 2, she said she wanted him. Mm. It just never worked out. And now is the time it kind of, I felt like for her, it was like, okay, let's go for it. I just feel like everything has a right time. Maybe. And I feel like between Maura and Francesca, I felt like it was always going to be Maura.
Quiet. Well, I've just seen your phone ringing with a certain name on it.
What is the name?
Danny.
Danny, boy.
So tell us about what's going on now.
We are together.
Are you an official couple? Why isn't he listening to the show? He should know you're on Uber.
Yeah, good point.
Because he's running around like a madman trying to get prepped, bless him, for another event we've got after this. So
he's
literally running around like a headless chicken trying to sort his life out. He's almost as crazy as me.
So, but is that, I mean, because you essentially haven't known each other that long.
No, it's been a month.
So are you worried?
Do you know what? Typically, I would say yes. If the villa didn't exist and any of that didn't exist, I would be like, a month, are you for real? But I feel like when you live with someone for 24 hours a day, constantly, you see them first thing in the morning, you see them at night, you see them when they're upset, you see them when they're happy, like you literally see everything. Just being in the villa alone speeds everything up. So I feel like as much as me and him have like labelled it, at the same time, we don't act like we have. We genuinely take it day by day and we're just like, we just enjoy being around each other.
But it's fast. You've met the families.
Yeah. To be fair to him, that was like somewhat of an accident, but he loved it because obviously my family met me at the airport, so he had no choice really when it came to my family.
Hi.
He had no choice. It was like he walked in, it was like my parents and my cousins and my best friends.
It's like your worst nightmare. You just started dating someone
and they're all there just smiling in your face at the airport. Yeah. But then from that point on, you know, he came with me to my cousin's graduation and met more of my family, so that was very intentional.
Wow.
I went to Leeds and to Hull and stuff to meet his family, so those things were intentional, and I just felt like it made sense. I just feel like because his family lives so far away, it's nice that my family have kind of like not taken him in, but he is basically like family to them. Like he has another family here, and I feel
so
like
you basically
helps.
Are living together and stuff as well then?
Not yet. Okay. No. Not
that's going to be happening soon. This is a roller coaster. This is going quick.
Potentially, well, we both need to move, and it's been a topic of conversation. Whether or not it will definitely happen, we're going to see. Because
but it might.
It could. It's just, you know, ooh, this is real life now. It's not the villa anymore.
Yeah, 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 it's true.
We've got to think about it.
No one's
going to
vote one of you out.
Exactly. This is real life. Yeah. With,
but were you
bills.
Were you upset that Danny contacted some of the exes from the show?
No. I was actually one of the people encouraging him to do so very soon. I just feel like when you're on the show, everything looks worse and is heightened and feelings are, you know, sped up and stuff like that, and it's felt like out of respect if he genuinely got on with them, even if it was just on a friendship level, regardless the situation wasn't the best of situations, and out of respect he should check that they're okay.
So I can understand that. That's very level headed of you.
Yeah. I think, gosh, I wish I was like you.
The Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio.
In the studio with me this week, I have my gorgeous Irish friend, Riad.
Hi there, how you doing?
It's time for one of my favourite games, Shitter Twitter.
Twitter.
Should it be like a Christmas-like thing? Like,
with jingle bells?
Maybe.
And then farting sounds because it's shit. Yeah, great, perfect.
Done. The rules of Shitter Twitter is just, hey, let's read later. You feel like maybe you're on a roll and you've just come up with so many tweets and you can't tweet them all at once, and so you save some but then you forget about it. Or something that you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to say that publicly, and so you save it to like come back to later.
Well, I didn't think I had any until I went in. I never checked my draft, and turns out that I didn't save these purposely. It happened because my old flat had such shit internet.
Oh, so they never sent. Ooh, that's another reason why you skipped out Twitter.
They just went in. There's one here that isn't even finished. I don't know how it got in there, but it's there.
I love those ones. Please read it.
So my first one is, so last night I was on the toilet.
What's the end of that?
I don't know. I'm trying to think, but the date is like 3.5 months ago.
Do you have any idea what you're doing on the toilet 3.5 months ago?
I think I had dairy the night before. And you know what dairy does to me, Whitten. I mean, it's atomic bomb. So I presume it would have ended something like, so last night I was on the toilet.
Yeah.
And I nearly shat out my liver.
Oh my gosh. Oh
or
my
something
God.
Like that. I'm not sure what it happened, but yeah.
Wow. So.
Read it.
Oh my God.
This is your turn, yeah?
Yeah. I just had a look at mine, and there's a few here. Two of them are about masturbating.
Hannah.
I know.
Come on. How did you ever get a job on the radio? No, honestly.
I was too busy masturbating. I shouldn't be a productive person. I spend too much time
sitting there flicking your bean.
I knew you were going to use that phrase. I knew it. I knew it!
Really?
Yeah. Why? I was literally just about to say that because I thought that that's what you were going to say.
Because you know I like
it. Oh, my God.
It's such a dirty disgust.
You disgust me. Anyways, so this one draft just says, anyone else make to-do lists in their head that include masturbating? Do you do that?
I think I have done.
So, like, okay.
I think I have done.
Context here.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm on a train home or on the underground home or whatever, and in my head I'm like, okay, when I get back, I need to do this, 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 and this. And, like, one of those things will be masturbating.
No, actually, I can tell you I have done that.
Back row and chill with Noel Clark and Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
We're about to speak to the Emmy Award-winning veteran actor, Joe Morton. Where are you in the world at the moment, Joe?
I'm in the Marina Del Rey in California.
Ah. Cali. So, Joe, one of the most watched television shows is Scandal.
And you played the nefarious Rowan.
How did you get involved with Scandal at the very, very beginning?
It's a very funny story. I came out to L.A. for pilot season. I had, of course, heard of Scandal, but never had an occasion to watch it. Watched the first season on Netflix. After seeing it, just fell in love with it. Thought, oh, this would be wonderful. I could figure out a way to get on the show for an episode or two.
Yeah.
And before I even had a chance to talk to my agent or my manager about trying to do that, I got a call from them saying that Scandal wanted to talk to me about coming onto the show.
Nice.
And when I spoke to producer Scandal, they made it clear that if I decided to take the role, that at the end of season two, the last two lines would be, "Hello, Olivia, hi, Dad." And I said, "Yes, that sounds great. I'll take the job."
Wow, fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic. You, sir, are also, in my eyes, not just because of Scandal and your wonderful career, but you're a legend because you are also in the Terminator films, which I happen to love from when I was a child. What was it like for you back then? Did you know those films, or that film in particular, T2, was going to be as big as it was?
Well, if you remember, the first Terminator film was rather a low-budget film.
Mm. Yeah.
It did very, very well. So Terminator 2 was, for James at that point, a very large step up. I was absolutely excited to be part of it, to work both with Arnold and Linda. So it was enormously exciting. Very big difference for me. I mean, I had done John Sayles movies in the past,
yeah,
which were, again, low-budget films, so I had never been around that kind of size and that kind of money in terms of film before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Was it one of those ones where the catering budget was bigger than some of the budgets of the movies you'd previously been on? I've been there a couple times.
Yeah, I think probably their catering budget was probably as large as what one of John Sayles' movies cost. Hey, James did things like he would, before we finished my death scene, he actually went sort of, because you remember at the end, after I die, Linda sort of scoots across the floor and they start shooting at her and all the windows get blown out.
Yes.
Well, he blew up windows long before he decided to shoot that scene, just to see what it would look like.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
You're listening to Christmas Hamper on Foo Bar Radio.
Ho, 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 ho.